Se amate rilassarvi su spiagge bianche, coccolati dal suono delle onde, ma anche scoprire usi e costumi di culture e posti lontani, non perdetevi la nuova stagione di Il Mondo Suona Così, il podcast che vi porta a conoscere mete da sogno. Cuba, Giamaica, Messico e molte altre. Cerca Il Mondo Suona Così sulla tua app di podcast preferita. Oltre le spiagge, c'è di più.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hi everyone and welcome to the 43rd episode of Praticamente Inglese. I hope you're doing well, guys. Today we will be talking about Italian restaurants around the world, the Italian cuisine. I will be asking to my guest about business lunch, business dinner in the US mainly, and also a few tips on how to improve our spoken English. And we will be doing this in a few seconds with Attilio Borra, which is a private chef, an Italian private chef that had the opportunity to work all around the world and is a very experienced chef. So I will be, you know, very curious to interview him to know a little bit more about restaurants, Italian cuisine, differences in between, you know, Italy and other countries abroad, let's say. Before doing that, I would like to remind you that Praticamente Inglese is everywhere. It's on Facebook, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Patreon. If you want to support me and you want to be part of the community, we meet every two weeks. On the Thursday, and we have a chat together with all the supporters. So if you want to be part of the community, you can go on patreon.com/Mattia Morelli. And also, since this week, I mean last week, Praticamente Inglese is on Amazon Music as well. So you can ask Alexa to play the podcast directly from the Echo device, and you can try and see if it's working or not. And you let me know, maybe with a DM on LinkedIn, as we usually, you know, have a chat and you share your feedback with me. And I really appreciate all the people that are sending me a DM saying about the podcast and how I can improve and all those kind of thing. So as we're going to have a long interview, something around 45 minutes with Attilio, I'm going to switch now in Italian for a bit, and I will tell you a little bit more about today's episode. Quindi ragazzi, come vi ho già detto, insomma, adesso in inglese ormai siete super pratici, trovate Praticamente Inglese un pochino ovunque, e oggi intervisto Attilio Borra, che è un private chef, una persona molto molto competente nella ristorazione ed è un ambasciatore, diciamo, della cucina italiana nel mondo, e molto esperto soprattutto in America. Quindi gli chiederò delle cose circa le differenze con l'Italia, delle piccole tips, differenze anche di termini che utilizziamo noi, cosa avviene un po' all'estero sia per la ristorazione sia per il cibo italiano, di cui siamo tanto famosi nel mondo. E il podcast è anche su Amazon Music dalla scorsa settimana, quindi insomma continuate a seguirlo, datemi i vostri feedback su LinkedIn, li aspetto, e quindi insomma spero che mi possiate dare suggerimenti per le prossime puntate. Se vi piacciono queste serie di interviste, che tipologia di persone volete che io intervisti in futuro, e un pochino insomma in generale cosa ne pensate, perché vado molto, tengo molto ai vostri feedback. So having said that, so let's get started with today's episode, and I would like to welcome Attilio Borra. Hi Attilio, how's it going?
Fine, how are you? Nice to be here with you.
Yeah, thanks for for accepting my invitation to the podcast Praticamente Inglese, as I would like to talk about restaurants. differences between Italian restaurants, American restaurants. You have a great experience abroad, but tell us a little bit more about yourself, Attilio.
Okay, well, my name is Attilio Borra, as you said. I've been traveling the world since I was a little kid. I was very lucky. And this passion of food that I had has brought me to get more and more the knowledge of how the food industry works, not only in Italy, but also abroad. When I was a teenager, I did a cooking school. Got a diploma for that. And very young, I started working in restaurants. I left Italy that I was only 18 to go to the United States. And as I was still going to college, I work in restaurants over there from the very, very bottom all the way up as I got older. So I started as a busboy and now I became a chef.
So what's a busboy in Italian?
A busboy from the term bust means to clean. So you bust clean the tables after the guest has gone, just so that you can reset the table and a waiter can have a free, nice, clean table to host some more clients. So usually in a restaurant that has a lot of turnover with the clients, the busboy is an essential figure just because they have to get the tables quick, clean, just so that they can be used again.
So, for example, in Italy, is the waiter, no? Il cameriere doing
correct,
it, right?
Correct, correct. Because the structure is different from the United States and Italy as far as the organization in the restaurant. Some figures like the busboys are not included, also because the structure of the Italian restaurant has the waiter to do many things. For example, I worked in a restaurant as a waiter here in Italy, and I was doing the decoration for the desserts. I was bringing the menu to the clients. I was getting the orders. Sometimes I even help the chef, depending on how big the restaurant is, but you help the chef also to do some appetizer. You cut the bread and you bring it to the table. All kinds of things that in United States, maybe they have several other figures to do this kind of job. So the waiter mainly just brings the food to the table or the drinks or things like that. And that's it.
Okay, yeah, it's quite interesting. So, for example, you know, what's the main difference from you were talking about the structure of a restaurant. So in Italy, we have usually the owner of the restaurant, right?
Right, right.
Which is the one who is the boss of everything, kind
exactly, of. Exactly, exactly. He's the boss. Sometimes he's also the chef. So the owner sometimes is the chef. So he's in the kitchen and he doesn't see what's happening outside the kitchen.
And then we have, let's say, the head waiter, say, il capo cameriere, il capo sala.
Il maître.
Il maître, okay. Il maître. Okay, and then we have the waiters.
Right.
Quindi camerieri.
Then you have the waiters, and then you have the waiters. That's in Italy. That's how it happens. Yes, more or less that's what happens. Maybe in some 5-star restaurants, very expensive, they do have the busboy figure, but it's very, very rare. In United States, no matter where you go, no matter if it's a down-to-earth pizzeria or if it's a high-end restaurant, you always have a busboy.
Right, okay, so you always have a busboy. That's absolutely great. And also, you know, for example, is more you can find more managers as well, no? So, for example, you have, I don't know, the restaurant manager, you have maybe the head sommelier, or you have all those kind of figures as well. I don't know if you want to tell me a little bit more about it, let's say.
Well, the restaurant manager usually is the one that says and overviews that everything goes well. Like he's the right arm of the owner where the restaurant the restaurant is, and so he takes care of everything, that everything goes fine, if all the clients are properly served, and there is no problems with the clients itself. For example, I can give you a funny story. One time as a client, I had a problem with the manager because I didn't like the service of the waiter, and I did not tip him the right amount. I tipped him less. So the manager, when I paid my bill and I was going toward the exit, he waited for me at the exit door because he wanted to know why I tipped the waiter less money, because he wanted to understand if the waiter did something wrong, just so that he could fix this and sort out the problem with the waiter, or if I was a stingy client that I didn't pay him enough because I was cheap in a sort of way. So
right,
that's the very important role in the manager. He always has to take care of things besides also the supplies. When the restaurant is closed, he has to do all kinds of different other things that the management itself of the restaurant is under control.
We'll get to the tips, no? Sulla mancia, later on.
Tips.
Yeah,
yes,
because
yes.
It's quite interesting as yes. Well, the fact that here in Italy it's not so popular to leave the tip. To the waiter. In America or in the UK, I mean, my experience was in the UK, it's kind of normal to leave the tip to...
It's a must.
You must, yes,
absolutely. It's a must. It's not like it's an option that you give. Now in Italy, because we have a lot of people traveling maybe, and they also got this kind of habit, sometimes even in Italy, a client leaves the tips. But the difference is that out of a $100 bill, they leave maybe 1 or 2 euros as a tip. In United States or in UK, you have a fixed percentage that you have to leave, which is 15%. So instead of 1 or 2 euros, you have to leave 15 euros as a tip.
Yeah, I remember in England was the service charge, was called the service charge.
Right,
and
right.
It was, I remember when I used to live in London, it was 12.5%. That when you finish to your dinner, you ask for the bill, il conto, the bill, you have this 12.5% of service charge, and you can as well as you said, it's not mandatory that you need to pay, but
right.
I mean it's very difficult to find someone that is not going to pay for the service charge unless you had an issue during the service or something like that, right?
Right, right. But now it's funny because you said the bill. That's another difference between two countries. There are Anglo-Saxon country between UK and United States, for example. In UK, you said bill. In United States, you say the check.
You don't say
the bill. The bill is like something you pay to a supplier or my electric bill. That's what I intended. It's so funny that you have all different kind of terminology to mean the same thing. And this is also part of the English language, which gives you many opportunities to interpret it one noun that had different meanings. And it's,
So for example, in England is like the service charge. Is it the same right. In the US?
Yes, yes. The service charges are the same. Now, in United States, some restaurants, especially a little high-end restaurants, they have no matter... See, let me open a parenthesis here for a second. When I used to work, I used to get 10% tips on tables up to 8 people. From 8 people up, the tips was already included in the bill, in the check. So
right.
While you go there just with your wife or your girlfriend and you give me your tip, so you have to really calculate the tip manually and add it to the check, from 8 people up, the 15% was already included. Nowadays, there are many restaurants in the United States where you go and the service charge, no matter if you're by yourself or if you're like with 20 people, it's already included in the check. And you have to be careful to read the check because when it's already included, you will say it in a tiny little thing, you know? So you mm-hmm. read the check, you read the total, it's $100. But if you don't read correctly right where the total is, you don't notice that the service charges have been already added on, because underneath the total there is add service charger. Now the add, it's just an abbreviation of additional,
right?
Which if you don't put the period or the point after add, it means a verb, add.
Right.
Something else. So it's very confusing, very tricky, and you do have to know that. Otherwise, you end up paying a double tip to your waiter, which many people do regardless, because they just don't read. They read the total, they assume that there is no tips included, they just see add the service charges, which they will add the service charger, but the add is something that is actually an additional one, not something that you're adding to it.
Yeah, because also I think with the tips, with all the service charge, the restaurants will pay the waiter an additional amount, you know? So it's like in Italy, we have contracts, no, with the waiter. I don't know, it would be at the end of the month, maybe 1,000 euros per month, 1,200 euros per month. And we don't have so many tips in here in Italy.
In Italy, the waiter is paid by income.
Okay.
So it is a true employee of the restaurant, just like any other figure inside the restaurant. And he has a fixed income that he receives every month.
And what about the U.S., for example?
In the U.S., it works different because, of course, all the waiters have to be legalized. And so they are hired as employee, but they don't get paid a fixed income like here. They have minimum wage that, according to each state, has an amount. So to give you an example, when I was working, the minimum wage was $1.01 per hour. So I would work 8 hours a day in a restaurant and I would get paid $8.08. And that was the legal amount that I would get paid as an employee. Of course, on top of that, I get paid with the tips. So the waiter in the United States or in UK, for this matter, they make money. Their income depends on the service because depends on the tips.
Right.
In Italy, it doesn't work that way. Of course, the waiter still have to be kind and still have to be a good waiter because otherwise he can incur in some problems with his employer. But the thing is that you as a client do not have a direct control of what the performance of the waiter was according to whatever money you leave them as a tip. So the only way for you to complain if something went wrong is to go straight to the owner or to the restaurant manager per se and just explain what the problem was. In United States, it works just with a tip.
Ok, fammi fare un piccolo recap in italiano. Quindi da noi in Italia ovviamente abbiamo il cameriere è assunto come qualsiasi altra figura all'interno del ristorante, mentre invece in America soprattutto il cameriere ha un cosiddetto minimum wage, quindi una soglia minima che che ogni stato deve garantire a qualsiasi persona che lavora per ore.
Corretto.
Quindi $8 all'ora, $10 all'ora, quello che sia.
Esatto.
E in più ha tutta quella parte di tips che sono molto più generose rispetto in Italia, poi quasi tutti pagano perché viene aggiunto direttamente al conto finale e che quindi poi si vanno a ridistribuire tra i camerieri.
No, ogni cameriere ha la sua tip, perché negli Stati Uniti nel momento in cui tu a fine giornata porti a casa $100 di tips, per esempio, su quei $100 tu devi dichiararli e vanno a far parte di quello che tu dichiari come tuo reddito personale, quindi non è suddiviso. Semmai tu cameriere vai a dare una percentuale delle tue mance al busboy. Perché
che è colui che ti ha pulito il tavolo.
Certo, perché senza di lui tu non avresti tavoli puliti, quindi il busboy in genere prende anche una piccola percentuale delle mance dal cameriere di quella zona, perché ogni cameriere ha una zona, nei ristoranti divisi in zone, ogni cameriere ha 3-4 tavoli e quindi 5 quelli che sono, e quindi il busboy che lavora in quella zona va a prendersi una percentuale da parte di quel cameriere.
So it's like a little entrepreneur, the waiter in the US.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it's an entrepreneur because he has to manage not only the client, but he also has to manage the people that works for him. And this guy's the boss boy.
Okay, so it's actually the thing is, if you find a new job, you want to change the restaurant, you want to work for another restaurant, you go there. And before, you know, accepting the role, you ask for how many tips, how is the service charge and all those kind of things. You as a waiter, you should be very interested to know or is it more or less
it's
the same?
It's already set up. I mean, the percentage of tips that are being already set up nationwide. And when a waiter goes work in a restaurant, the only thing that he has to learn is where his main job is, and where he picks up the dishes, and where he brings them to the table. As far as the minimum wages and as far as the tips, the percentages and the amount don't change. So it doesn't matter which restaurant you work for.
And also in terms of service, of course, with these rules, you have a waiter very, very, he will pay great attention to the client.
Oh,
compared,
absolutely.
Compared to maybe, I mean, in Italy, we are Italian, so we, as a must, we try to have a great service, to provide a great service to our customers in general.
Yes,
of
yes.
course, if you get incentivized by tips, it could be even more, right?
Nay. Let's just put it this way. Italians, waiters are very professional. I find them that if you go in restaurants sometimes, I'm sure you find that also in your hometown, there are the restaurants where there is waiters that have been working there for 25 years. And they've been there a long time. And that means not only that they know the restaurant, they like the owner and everything else, and they like the food of that restaurant, but they also being appreciative of the clientele. And the clientele is very important, because the feedback that they get, it makes me, as an owner, being an appreciative person toward the service that I give to my clients. So it's just a way of doing and serving. For example, when you go in an Italian restaurant, you sit down, they bring you the menu, and you have on your table nothing, maybe a couple of breadsticks packages. That's it. You have nothing else. Every kind of food and drinks come after you have your order and express whatever you want from the menu. In United States, it's not like that. In United States, you sit down, the first thing that the waiter comes and pour some water on you. So you have a fresh glass of water. Maybe bring some little bread and something. And all this even before sometimes you order your food on the menu. So the waiter in United States is also forced to come more and more time to fill up that water that you have, because most of the time they drink tap water. They don't order bottled water like we do over here. So that's like one of the difference. Plus, because they do get the tips, they come, how is your food? Is that okay? You need anything else? You want me to bring you a little bit of this, a little more sauce, a little more ketchup, a little of this. So they come very often to your table. I have to say, in certain case, they're even annoying, because they really come too much. And I'm like, okay, I'm fine. Please leave me alone. Let me talk to the person that I'm with.
Please.
I mean, I'm talking more to you than the person I'm with at the restaurant sometimes. You know, it's not always like that. And they're very kind and they're very gentle, I have to say. They're not rude, or they're not, they're not invasive. You know, they're very polite. At the same time, in Italy, everything is reduced to a minimum. So they bring you the food, you start to eat, you will not see the waiter until it's finished and they take your plate away. They rarely come to say how is it going, everything okay. Maybe they come one time, is
unless
everything okay?
Unless you are in a Michelin star restaurant, service is like amazing everywhere, right?
Yes, of course. But if you go in a Michelin star hotel, in a Michelin star restaurant, you pay like $200 per person to eat. You pretend a little more service than the pizzeria in the way you usually go, of course. That's also the other kind of thing, the Italian mentality. If I pay more, I deserve to have more, no matter if it's food, no matter if it's service. In United States, it works the same way, but as far as the service is concerned, because you pay with the tips, the service is always the same. So the waiter will be always attentive to your table, and he will always come and trying to give you whatever you need even before you ask it.
Yeah, because the service he provides you is like will result in more money at the end of the day. No?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know how many times I was paid when I was working as a waiter because I made I said a joke, I made the client laugh and all this. I got paid much more than the 10 or 15% of tips just because the client had a fantastic experience. That's what they want. They want the experience inside the restaurant. They don't just want to go there to feed themselves.
Right. And what about coperto? No, we have il coperto qui, no?
Yes,
here.
Yes, so okay,
tu paghi un euro, due euro a persona. How is that working? I mean,
no, it doesn't work like that in the United States. In the United States, you don't pay for bread, you don't pay for the coperto. You pay for the bread if you ask some more, maybe, besides what they ask you. But usually the coperto and bread, it's something that only in Italy we have, which at the end of the day, it helps the restaurant owner to pay his own expenses for the tablecloth. Let's consider that a lot of time when you don't pay the coperto in Italy or in the United States, you're not eating on a cotton tablecloth, you're probably eating on a paper tablecloth, and that's why you don't pay. But even high-end restaurants, they don't put the coperto as a voice on your bill. I'm sure that whatever other expenses that there is, it's already included in your bill under another name, or it mixed with the food cost, but they don't just specify the coperto for sure.
Yeah. And let me ask you this. So we talked about, you know, the restaurant. What about the chef? The what about behind the scene?
Let's behind say. The scene.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very curious to know as well the differences in between, of course, Italy and the and United States when it comes to Italian restaurants. You know, you told me that there are quite a few differences in recipes as well, raw materials. Could you give us some examples of, you know, something that's what's going on with the Italian cuisine abroad?
Okay, let's start by saying that the Italian cuisine is probably the most popular cuisine there is in the whole world. No matter if you go to Australia, China, Hong Kong, Saudi Arabia, or Germany, or United States, or Brazil, Italian cuisine, everybody love. Anywhere I went, I'm like, I'm Italian. Oh, I love Italian food. I love Italian cooking, and everybody loves that. So because of this, a lot of Italian restaurants popped up everywhere. And even if you're not Italian, you want to use the Italian name just so that as a marketing strategy, it will attract more people. Now, a lot of Italian restaurants, they call themselves Italian, even though they're not owned by an Italian person. They have tried to copy some dishes, but because they don't have the culture, they don't have our history inside, they don't know very well what an Italian dish means. So they have to adapt it to the local palate. For example, I used to work in Louisiana, which is down to the south in the Gulf of Mexico, and they have all this kind of mixture of a European French history as far as the cuisine is concerned. So they put everything together, so you may be able to find a steak with some crawfish on top, crawfish tail on top, which is something that we never thought of. The crawfish is like the sweetwater shrimp. The one that it's really big. It's a shrimp that is really big, and I gamberi di fiume d'acqua dolce che hanno
okay.
It's a freshwater. Li chiamano i crawfish. E lì in Louisiana li trovi in ogni fossato. Scavi un po' con la vanga e ti vengono fuori i crawfish. Cioè li trovi dappertutto. È solo che appunto parlo in italiano.
Sì sì certo.
Lì in Louisiana ad esempio ti facevano la cotoletta alla milanese con i gamberi d'acqua dolce sopra, perché comunque per loro una cotoletta alla milanese, che poi tra l'altro era impanata in modo diverso, era fritta nell'olio, non nel burro, non era battuta, non c'aveva l'osso come quelle che aveva, per loro era una bistecchina semplice, non valeva. E allora per arricchirla, panna e sugo di pomodoro per fare una salsina rosa, e poi ci sbattono dentro i gamberi e hanno fatto un piatto fenomenale.
Sotto, diciamo, l'Italian cuisine.
Esatto. Oppure le famose fettuccine Alfredo, che adesso sono diventate addirittura un piatto. Sono così famose, come pirateria è così famosa questa cosa, che è diventato pure un piatto internazionale la fettuccine Alfredo, che poi non è nient'altro che aglio, panna, formaggio parmigiano e basta. Quindi tu mangi sta mappazza che quando si asciuga diventa, le tiri su, ti viene su tutte le cose, non ce la fai a torcigliarle, e che è una mappazza agliosa, pazzesca, che loro la usano come contorno addirittura.
Neanche yeah, come and, what, and what about pizza, for example? There's a big issue with pizza as well, because I remember, you know, they put pineapple, ananas, no?
Oh my God.
Into it or oh things God. Like that, right?
Yes. So yesterday I was in this room with this Chinese guy that lives in California, and he asked me, chef, when I eat a pizza here, after I eat it, it's very heavy. It takes a long time for me to digest it. I feel sleepy, and sometimes I even have stomach burn. I took a trip to Naples, and I went to eat a pizza there, and oh my God, I didn't feel thirsty. I didn't feel like I had a lot of digestion. I didn't feel what is the difference? When he asked me that question, I was like, okay, we need to do a room aside just so I can tell you the differences, because there are like so many differences. The fact is, the pizza nowadays, no matter if you have a flat a disc of pasta, you can put anything on it and it becomes a pizza. But us Italian nowadays, especially if you travel from some serious pizzeria in the south or north of Italy, you have the chefs or even the pizzaiolo that have made a search on the flour, that they have combination of flour. They produce their own yeast. So it's a sourdough, fresh yeast they use. They do research on the raw material. So the tomato must come from Sicily because it's not a water tomato. It has a lot of pulp. So the pizza will not be watery after they cook it. Or the mozzarella comes from a particular kind of factory that has a particular cow that feeds on a particular grass. And the milk, its flavors, and the mozzarella, blah, 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 blah. All this, it's research that we do to evolve ourselves in Italy, because we are so down in the tradition and the culture of food that is a must for us to evolve in this kind of raw materials. The flour, for example, we are using a lot of ancient wheat nowadays, which is a particular kind of wheat that has much more protein, that has fibers, that has vitamins. It has a very, very low value of gluten inside. In the United States, it's flour, tomato, and let's go.
So flour, farina, then the yeast e lievito.
Corretto.
Wheat.
Grano.
Okay.
Il grano. Qui in Italia usiamo i grani antichi per fare anche le farine, che hanno un basso contenuto di glutine, che hanno tantissime fibre, che hanno diversi tipi di vitamine dentro e sono molto digeribili. Quindi noi abbiamo proprio una ricerca importante in quelli che sono i materiali che usiamo per andare a fare una lievitazione, piuttosto che non gli ingredienti che mettiamo nella pizza. C'è un particolare pomodoro. Adesso tra inglese e italiano la mia lingua ogni tanto parte,
quando fai lo switch.
C'è un pomodoro siciliano che viene coltivato senza acqua, dove proprio è terra sabbia quasi, però è un pomodoro che è solo carnoso e senza acqua, quindi quando lo cucini nella pizza non hai quell'acquetta del pomodoro e senti un qualcosa di veramente fragrante. Negli Stati Uniti non è così, nel senso che a meno che non vai nelle pizzerie italiane, proprio italiane, quindi parlo di New York, parlo di Miami, parlo di Chicago o Los Angeles, ma per il resto degli altre città o degli altri stati trovi la confettura di pomarola dalla bottiglia, che la mettono dentro, gli mettono un po' di origano, un po' di polvere d'aglio secco e la mischiano, e quella è la loro pomarola che usano per fare la pizza. Cioè non c'è questa ricerca, non c'è questo tipo di raffinatezza degli ingredienti, anche perché negli Stati Uniti la pizza ti arriva, hanno le misure. Anche un'altra cosa, it's a curious thing.
Tell me more about it.
In the United States, unless you go to an Italian Napolitanian pizzeria, the majority of the pizzeria, they don't go by ingredients. For example, we have the prosciutto funghi, ham and mushrooms, which is one kind of pizza. So if you order the prosciutto funghi, they will bring you the pizza with ham and the mushrooms. In the United States, they ask you, what kind of size you want? small, medium, large, the extra large, just like if you're buying a t-shirt, you know, because it all depends on the sizes. And they have, you can do put all the toppings that you want. So you can have a large with pepperoni, che pepperoni è la salsiccia calabrese, quella piccante.
Sì, sì, pepperoni. È tipo la pizza alla diavola, no?
Bravo.
Pepperoni pizza.
there is the meat lover pizza. Meat lover pizza. Consider every meat there is in the world. Pork meat, beef, pepperoni, salame, prosciutto, everything in one pizza with tons of cheese. And that's what they like because they want to be full. They want to feel this mouth full of flavors, you know, inside. And this is like what is my hardest task, you know. At the beginning, you said that I'm an ambassador of the Italian cuisine. And that's where I want to go. I don't want to go to the operator that is actually doing something to survive and to work in his business. But I wanted to go to the consumer that to as an awareness toward him when he goes by an Italian product, but especially when they go eat in a restaurant like this, and teach them that if they come to Italy, they're not going to find a meat lover pizza. So that to bring them to what our culture is and to find that balance in understanding that they must respect our cuisine as well as our cuisine respects their recipes, their cuisine, just because they have different stories and they have tradition and different way of cooking it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Attilio, and you're very passionate about, you know,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Italian cuisine, and I can, if I put myself in your shoes, in the U.S., no, and when you look at those Italian restaurants, which are not real Italian restaurants, and they try to do all this miscellaneous things that, you know, they put everything into it, you know, there's no culture behind the raw material. And maybe the only way you can do it is maybe because you get into an Italian pizzeria or an Italian restaurant where the owner is from Italy, he's just moved from Italy. And I understood as well that there are quite a few owners of restaurants that they even get the raw material, the ingredients
from
directly
si.
From Italy,
si,
right?
Si, si,
is
si,
that
absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. There is I'll give you an example. A dear friend of mine has a restaurant, an Italian restaurant in San Diego, in La Jolla, which are the hills, the high-end hills of San Diego area. And he has a beautiful restaurant. He has the branzino arriving from Italy. He has the true mozzarella di bufala arriving from Italy. And that's because he wants to give to his clients the same flavor, the same texture, the same kind of a mixing of ingredients that they may be able to taste in Italy when they come. And that is like an education of the palate, an education also in understanding the quantities, because a pizza doesn't need to be extra large to appreciate the flavors of it, you know? And that's why what I do and what many other Italian restaurants do, they are owned by Italians. But the trick is the name. When you go in the United States and you see a name of, like, let me ask you, would you walk into a restaurant that says Italian restaurants, Forbici?
No, that doesn't make sense to me, Forbici.
Would you go eat, let's go eat at Caesar's, you know? I mean, what that doesn't mean, you know? So
yeah.
they always try to come up with names that sound Italian, but they have no meanings whatsoever, even for an Italian. It's like, what is Forbici? What are they going to do? They
right.
cut you up when you get in or something, you know? And so that is the beginning to understand that that's not a true Italian restaurant, for sure.
Listen, Attilio, let me ask you this. I mean, praticamente inglese, my podcast is all about, you know, practically English, you know, things that people that can use straight away for you know, to apply just the next day with mainly with their colleagues or co-workers, as this I'm always touching a few topics regarding business in general. What about, you know, business lunch, business dinners? Would you are they I'm sure are very popular in the US, you know?
Oh God, yes, absolutely.
Can you tell me something about, you know, what's the difference in between us, let's say, a business dinner for our perspective, and from an US, an American perspective?
It's a big difference.
Okay.
The Italians, no matter what kind of a deal, no matter what kind of a business they got to talk about, they organize a lunch or a dinner, business dinner, and they close a deal during the meal. They actually even sign a contract, or they organize something that that meal celebrates their discussion. Sometimes even interchangeable things. Or if you want to celebrate a new human resources inside your structure, things like that. It's all very concentrated on this meal, which usually has different courses and so on and so on. You know, in United States, a business meal has the same purpose, but usually is not so formal sometimes. So sometimes the deal is not closed at the table, but they just have a few and exchange of words. And sometimes they talk about other things. I mean, it's a business. It's like more of a team building kind of a thing where you get together, you discuss, you talk about the business, you talk about this and you talk about that. Then you go back to the office and you talk about business. But it's easier in the United States to close a deal on the golf course rather than at the table while you're eating. In Italy, everything is with your legs under the table, always.
Right. So you mean there are quite a few different activities that you can do in order to close a deal. You can organize something at the golf course where you play golf, or okay.
Absolutely. There's not a manager or a CEO of a company in the United States that doesn't play golf. All of them do. And they probably would even appreciate if you go play with them, especially if you're a foreigner, because to them, an American person, it's almost like if they give it as a granted that they would go and play golf. In Italy, it's not granted at all. So when they find a foreigner that plays golf, I learn how to play golf just because so I can go with some CEO or some major important person on the golf course and talk to them as I was playing. And sometimes even my low capabilities in playing was also a source of laughter and to break the ice a little bit, you know, just so that there was no tension. Also, because one thing is to stay with your table underneath the legs of with your legs under the table and to taste the food, and the food brings pleasure, the food brings warmth. In the golf course, if you miss the shot, you're mad at yourself. So you started to change also your personality. So if you want to close a deal and the person that has to sign your contract is losing, or it's not in that good of a day, and all his shots are like going left and right, you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to do anything today. So, I mean, you know, you also have this kind of a thing that you got to consider.
That's great. That's a great example. And do you have any suggestion, any tips for our audience in order to improve their English, their spoken English? We have quite a few people that maybe have studied English at school. They would like to improve. I know they always say, okay, you should listen to you should watch movies, you know, in original language. What would be something on top of that?
Okay.
You know, something that really helped you to improve your English, and on top of speaking with the, you know, native speakers all the time,
right,
every day,
right.
You know.
Okay, so I was lucky because I started to travel in foreign country when I was 12, and I started to speak a little English. But after my summer was over and I had to come back to school, whatever I've learned those 2 or 3 months that I was abroad, no matter where I was, it kind of faded away. When I went to United States, I went to school, and because of my knowledge of English, I had to do what they call some summer school, just so that I can improve during the summer my some of subjects that I had to learn, and then I can move them on into the fall semester. There is one thing that helped me a lot. And there was one thing that a teacher, my English teacher, taught me, and it was amazing. I still have it in my mind every time I speak. So, first of all, you have to speak simple. In Italian, we have presente, passato prossimo, congiuntivi, passato remoto, congiuntivo, passato. We have so many different kind of conjugations of the verbs, which are correct, which is part of our culture and our language. In English, keep it simple. Present and past tense. Do not start to think, se ci fosse stato una cosa... No. If I was there, se c'ero, punto. Cose molto semplici. Because your brain, in the beginning, has to think the sentences in Italian. It has to translate it in English. And unfortunately, we cannot avoid that. It's a common thing that we all do. So to have this translation process of our brain, it's easier if you think it in the present and the past tense, because the sentence can come right up easier instead of thinking, I wouldn't have done, I wouldn't have, I mean, I wouldn't have. I mean, come on. I mean, you will go crazy. Your tongue will actually make a knot in your mouth. And so, first of all, to keep it simple. Second of all, learn as many names as you can, because the English language is very easy to learn. Also, because some of the names have a derivation to become verbs or to become adverbs or to become anything. I'll give you an example. The word box. Box means scatola. But if I had to tell you in scatolare, I tell you box it up. So I use the same name as a verb. Splash, same other thing. A splash of water, uno schizzo d'acqua. But if I want to dive in the water, I make a big splash there. So it comes to be a word. So the more your vocabulary is wide and has more nouns learn, you are able to speak the language, because sometimes by using present and past tense and have the names, the proper names expressed in the sentence, no matter if the construction of the sentence is backward because you translate it from Italian to English, they will still understand you.
That's great.
Third and last, never be afraid to speak English with another Italian. Because we Italian, when we speak among ourselves, we tend to speak Italian because it's easier, of course. And we are kind of shy because I don't speak good English, so I don't want to feel embarrassed of speaking in English with other people. Don't do that. Don't do that at all. Feel free. Just go with the flow. You know, if you make a mistake, yeah, you make a mistake. You know, what's the big deal? If a foreigner comes to Italy, they don't speak Italian like that. So it's the same kind of thing. Everybody accepts mistakes, but they even accept more if you go with it and you don't just feel like, oh, no, I don't feel like talking because of, no. Always speak Italian with other Italians and always try to be not too focused on the correct things. Just speak it. After a while that you speak it, the correct form will come by itself.
Yeah, because we're looking for perfection, but this doesn't exist, first of all. I make so many mistakes myself, you know, as well. I'm not an English teacher. I'm just a guy who had the chance to work abroad, to learn English, you know, and I'm trying to share my experience with other people, and that's the way it is. And also, I understood as well that the people tend to appreciate the fact that you're trying to speak their own language,
right.
So they're trying to help you as well
right.
At the same time. So that's absolutely great tips. Thank you very much, Attilio.
You're welcome.
Where can we find you? I mean, tell us a little bit more about your project. We can find you on Clubhouse, because I need to say something to my audience. So Attilio is a real ambassador of the Italian cuisine. He organizes every day rooms about Italian cuisine, recipes, raw materials, the Italian culture. And he is trying to educate mainly Americans, but in general, all people from all over the world about Italy, Italian culture, Italian cuisine, of course, which is your thing, Attilio. But on top of Clubhouse, where can we find you? If you have any project, upcoming project, tell us a little bit more about it before we wrap up this conversation.
Thank you for this. I really appreciate it, Mattia. Okay, so you can visit my website, www.iloveitaliancooking.com. It's also easy to find on Google. And on my website, you can actually have a sense of what I do. I also consult for a major German multinational company that produces knives, an Italian national company that produces pots. So I do also have my website as an e-commerce for the sales of this particular professional and residential places. But the thing that I'm most proud of, that I am a personal chef. So I encourage everybody to try the personal chef experience. What does that mean? It means that when we're going to end this lockdown, I'm definitely going to use that to do in presence. That means that I will come to your house and I will cook for you, and you can see how I do, what I use, accessories, raw materials, and so on. If instead we're still on a lockdown, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing on a Zoom call just so that I can see the actual pot as it cooks, and I can see the hand of my client putting his hands on it. So it will become a personal chef experience with attached a cooking course that helps a lot, because I can give you tips as you do it. So it is a nice thing, because I can actually control what you're doing, and at the same time you're doing it yourself. So the pride of realizing something on your own is definitely higher than not rather than having somebody else doing it for you. So I have my website that you can contact me. My emails and contacts are there. And then one little thing that I did for everybody to enjoy, I create, if you have a Spotify account, it's very funny, because I think that cooking, it's like making a paint. We are all painters. We take different colors, which in my case are ingredients, and we put them all together in a canvas, which is my pot. And the final result is a nice plated dish. Well, to do that, I think the creativity and the state of mind has to be always high up. So I created a page on my website called Recipes in Music. So what you do, you have, for example, you wanted to cook a risotto, you go on my webpage, you see the recipe of the risotto, step by step what to do. Yet, to get you in the mood and to, at the same time, to get you in a better things, you can connect with my playlist on your Spotify account. I prepared a playlist that will be as long as the time that you need to cook that risotto. So not only you will enjoy yourself, but you also have to apply a technique, because you have to end your cooking process when the last song ends.
That's a great idea. That's fantastic.
And so you have different recipes with different things. So I have, like, for example, spaghetti alla Vesuviana, which is a typical Naples dish with all Naples songs. I have spaghetti o bucatini, a pasta alla Norma, which is a typical Sicilian, where you have to fry the eggplant, and then you have this nice robust tomato and this strong ricotta salata that you put on top. I thought that would be a rock playlist. So you have all this rock in there. The risotto with mushrooms, just like I was talking to you, has porcini mushrooms. And it has, Frank Sinatra songs. So you can hear all your favorite Frank songs for 40 minutes as you cook your risotto. And it's funny. It's a cute thing to do. I find it very pleasant, because I always listen to music when I cook.
You're an artist. You're an artist, Attilia. But thank you very much
for
being with me today in my podcast. I really hope I'm sure the audience enjoyed today's episode, and please let me know on the all the channels we have on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, almost everywhere, or you can send me a DM on LinkedIn to tell me a little bit more about the podcast, if you have any suggestion for the upcoming episodes and stuff like that. In the meantime, I would like to say have a great week ahead, everybody, and thank you again, Attilio, for being with us, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye, Attilio.
Ciao, grazie Mattia. Ciao a tutti. Ciao. Bye to all.
Ciao.
Cosa significa muoversi liberamente? Scoprire le infinite possibilità e superare i propri limiti. Lasciati ispirare da Muoversi liberamente. tante storie raccontate da Kuwait, ora disponibili sulle piattaforme podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.